chasing shadows again. Oh, beautifully done by Campbell. Great goal. That's magnificent. Wonderful turn. And from there on, there was only one conclusion. 5-0. Kevin Campbell adds his name to the scorebook on a magnificent afternoon for Everton Football Club. Just watch the turn here now as Hutchison plays it in. Beautifully done. Onto the left foot and bingo.
Oh, yes, it is.
The Good Times Everton podcast with Kevin Melling and Liam Knight. Brewing the Toffees since 1995.
Liam, on a journey like ours, you realise there are seasons that contribute to the formative years of your fandom and even your youth. We both became teenagers during 1999-2000. And looking back on a season of relative comfort in between two tumultuous campaigns, it's much more eventful than you may recall from the top of your head, including the ultimate betrayal. This is the only Everton side that will ever straddle two millennia. As when Will 3K comes around, Bramley Moore will just be a shipwreck at the bottom of the Irish Sea. It's 1999-2000. It's the millennium. Liam, how are you feeling about it? It's episode 3 on the Good Times Everton podcast.
Well, seeing as it's the millennium, I think there's only one way I can feel, Kev. It's here and I like it. I think that's the correct answer. Yeah, it's a season that I have really fond memories of. And I think, like you say, because of your age, I think when you're 12, 13, as we were when the season was, it's all consuming, isn't it? Like, the match and football is kind of so big to you at that point. Not that it's not a massive party life as an adult, but I think it's that sweet spot, isn't it, where you're growing up and, you know, you're growing as a person. And I think it probably means a little bit too much at times during this season. But overall, it's a season that I have relatively fond memories of, and I'm really looking forward to revisiting this evening.
Absolutely. And I think we've both watched a lot of the same footage from that season. And it's a team that actually plays some decent football, scores a lot of goals. I think we should give a special mention here at the start for Kevin Campbell. This is the first season that Kev features in since we found out about his untimely passing. And we'll remember him properly one day, I think, with a tribute episode. That's almost certain in my mind, when the time is right. But just a few words for Kev, because obviously he's all over this season. It's his first full season as a Blue. And it was difficult watching it back and watching him scoring goals. The joy that he had in his football and the positive effect that he clearly had on other players, especially the younger lads. It was hard to watch.
That was one of the reasons I fell in love with Kevin. And you'll know that throughout this podcast, he'll come up. And, you know, anyone who knows me knows that Kevin Campbell's probably my favourite all-time Everton player. And I think you've hit the nail on the head about his positivity, how infectious it was. He was a really underrated player, I think, outside of Everton. And I have to admit, like other people, that was overly fussed when we got him, but that attitude they brought in, and you talk about playing with a smile on his face. It's the tail end of the season before, but it is in this season's kit, so I'm going to include it. I just remember reading the Evertonian in the summer of 1999. There was a picture of him celebrating his third goal against West Ham, and he peels away, and he just had this massive smile on his face, and it wasn't forced. It was dead genuine, and I think one of the reasons I loved him as a player was his enthusiasm for Everton. I mean, we'll probably touch on this episode. He really pushed for the move to Goodison. You know, Everton was struggling to come up with the money, but he really pushed for the move, and he was training on his own at Mottram Hall. You know, he was like, I just want to be at Everton. And yeah, well paid for it, but he really bought into Everton as a concept, and I like to think that myself and you and so many other Evertonians really bought into him in return.
Yeah, and he was our marquee signing of the summer of 1999. That was a move that just had to happen, and I think we were helped by the fact that he was so determined to come back, because, you know, imagine there would have been other clubs that would have noticed how prolific he was at the end of the previous season and would have been interested in taking him away from Trabzonspor. In the end, we do manage to get him back for around £3 million. It seems to be more money than we actually have to spend. There's a clear tightening of the purse strings that summer. A lot of big-name signings leave, many of them only after one season. Ibrahima Bakayoko to Marseille, Olivier Dacour from Lens, Marco Materazzi goes to Perugia. And then there's a few others like Craig Short, Slaven Bilic, Joe Parkinson finally retires after a couple of bad years with injury. John Oster goes to Sunderland. And then there are loans to Division One for Terry Phelan, Tony Grant, and Michael Branch. The other players that we bring in are low key, but you know, dependent pros, I think, the types of player that Walter Smith can trust. Mark Pembridge and Richard Goff both come in and really low key signings, but played most games during the season. Abel Xavier will join later on in the summer from PSV. He's not really much of a known quantity to any of us really, but a versatile player. And it's a decent pre-season. We win the 1-1 cup. So maybe this is where we need to start the journey from rather than in 1995, because is this our last trophy, the 1-1 cup that we parade proudly around Billmore against Rotherham United?
I don't know, because I think it might be the one in Australia. That Rotherham game, I seem to remember Richard Dunn was substituted at the referee's request because he was taking it quite seriously. But I just kind of want to go back a sec, actually, if you can, Kev. You touched upon Craig Short's departure there. Probably a story I hadn't even told you, Fonz. I was actually, the only time I went to Belfield was the day that Craig Short was sold. I was actually, my mum worked with the Gateman's son, and I was there. I met a few players as they come in the cars, and the news broke that Short had been sold. And looking back, I think if you look at it, he only signed the contract 3 weeks earlier. So I suspect he went for about £2 million, that a lot of that money was probably used towards the Kevin Campbell deal. But that's just my theory. But I just wanted to get in. This is one of my first memories this season is that pre-season. I was there in the kit, smiling. A few players came and gave me autographs. Got a few awkward photos, including with a certain Mr. Barnby. Well, I remember having a really awkward photo with Michael Ball. My dad was taking the pictures, and Michael Ball was leaning out his car. And he went, "No, that's a crap on that. Do it again." And like properly leaned out and put his arm around me. It was a really nice moment, and it was a glorious sunny day. And for me, that was my first memory season. I think that started off with a positive tone for me.
Belfield was the best. I've got my own Belfield story. I was also there this season. We'll come to that in a couple of months' time. But yeah, the new home kit, as you said, was released. We saw it at the end of the previous season in May. It's a bit of a departure from the previous one. I know you said you don't really like this one. I remember at the time being really big on it because
I loved it at the time, though. I loved the time, and I like the blue. Although I love the original 1-1 kit, the deeper blue is good. I just think, and I like blue socks, as you know, people will know the podcast is blue socks and white socks on the logo because I prefer Everton in blue socks.
That was nearly the name.
It really wasn't it? It was. I think the shorts were weird material. I don't know about yours, but mine went grey in the wash after about two washes.
Yeah, it felt like paper or something, didn't he? Really weird. And the other
pockets as well, didn't he? And this was the first season we wore numbers on shorts. I mean, it became mandatory in the Premier League the following season. But if you look at it back, ourselves and Chelsea and United's away kit, we start doing it before it becomes mandatory. Arsenal done it for a few years, but that's the sort of minutia that I live for, as you know.
Right. And this is that magic time, and it's the first one that we've had on the journey so far where the club brings out one new kit in the summer. So all the focus is on that. It's really exciting, and you just, you know, can't wait to get it. The season starts off on a bit of a strange note. It's kind of foundations are rocked a little bit when Franny Jeffers hands in a transfer request a couple of days before the start of the season against Man United.
Okay, yeah. So Kev shared an article here from The Guardian, which is written, well, co-authored by future Everton PR merchant Ian Ross. I remember reading about this in the paper on the eve of the season and being a little bit surprised, because I also read another article that Michael Ball was going to be out the team, which was a bit of a surprise given his form in the previous two seasons. So the article says, Francis Jeffers handed Everton a transfer request yesterday, 48 hours before the club kicked off this season with a visit from the treble winners Manchester United. Everton's manager Walter Smith immediately placed a prohibitive valuation of £15 million on the 18-year-old striker who scored 6 league goals in 15 games last season. Although the managerial team at Celtic, Kenny Dalglish and John Barnes, that's not in the article, that's just me, have already indicated they would be willing to make Jeff as the most expensive player in the club's history at £7 million. Smith is aware that no club would agree to invest more than double that amount on a largely untried teenager. Jeff is believed he should not only be guaranteed a regular senior football, but should also receive a sizable immediate rise. He agreed the terms of a new five-year deal only 5 months ago and was shortly see his weekly pay rise from £3,500 to £8,000. However, he's now believed to be seeking double that, citing his inclusion in the full England squad for last April's friendly in Hungary as proof that he is a seasoned professional. Several other clubs, notably Arsenal, that's foreboding, Newcastle United and Aston Villa would also be interested were he be allowed to leave for a more realistic fee. A graduate from the FA School of Excellence at Lillishall, Jeffers was brought up in the Everton area and he's a former Goodison Park season ticket holder. I don't want to say anything about it other than it will be a normal squad out against Manchester United, said Smith, who left Jeffers out of a match between the first team and the reserves on Thursday, which brought the issue to a head. Jeffers has been at loggerheads with Smith all summer and was left on the bench for the club's final pre-season friendly against PSV Eindhoven on Tuesday.
So there's clearly a bit of trouble there between Walter Smith and Franny Jeffers, and I quite like the way Walter handles this. He's the seasoned professional here. Jeffers is still only, you know, an 18-year-old kid. And he basically says, well, if you don't want to be here, you can go, but we're not getting ripped off. We want 15 million quid. We want to share the money. There's a really interesting little kind of sub-story there in that article. Sheffield United's managing director, John Thurman, has floated the idea of merger talks with Sheffield Wednesday, quote, sooner rather than later. He said he could see benefits for the game's biggest loss makers with a combined deficit of 16.5 million during the 97-98 season. Yeah, I bet he would. Sheffield United want to merge with Premier League Sheffield Wednesday, just form, you know, a Sheffield supergroup.
Yeah,
not a bad idea.
It's not given the travails of the club currently. I don't think it would be floated too well as an idea in our neck of the woods, would it?
No.
Just as an aside, I think one thing we didn't touch on the pre-season as well is, do you reckon Jeff has got the hump when we brought that journalist on against Man City? Some fella, I can't remember his name, but he was doing like a diary of the season, wasn't he? And Walter gave him a run out against City at Goodison.
I'm trying to remember when I was 18, like, that's possibly the kind of thing that would piss me off as well. Maybe you're right.
Yeah.
But yeah, Franny hands in a transfer request. You know, it's a big shock. We can't believe our ears. We can't believe his ears. It's Man United at home. Sorry, Franny. It's Man...
That's a good line, man.
It's Man United at home on Super Sunday. I was in the Gladys Street for this game, the front row. We moved our season tickets to the front row of the Gladys. I forget why. We ended up moving back to the paddock because it just wasn't a great view. You've got the net in front of you. You can't really see down the other end of the pitch. But anyway, Don Hutchison starts up front in place of Jeffers. It's a strong start from the Blues. Nick Barmby leaves Phil Neville on the floor. It's a really good shot just over the bar. And then Dwight York leaves poor Dave Watson flat-footed for 1-0. In the 7th minute. It is a good goal. It's the kind of York, Cole, it's the play that they become renowned for. Waggy is our age here. Like, he's the way right now.
He looks a lot older than we do now, doesn't he?
Everyone looked older back then. Like,
true, yeah.
That's not Waggy's business. Always seemed like, you know, 50. Like, it just seems wrong that, like, he's not. Anyway, Hutchison hits the post with a header. The one and the zero on his shirt are well too far apart. Don't know what Jimmy Martin's been playing at there.
Well, I'll let you tell Jimmy now because he's a bit no nonsense, isn't he? You can be the one to take that up with him. I love you, Jimmy. I got no problem with you.
Second half, Man United deny Hutchison, Barmby and Kev Campbell in the space of like 4 seconds.
I think Campbell has to do better, as much as I love him.
Yeah, the other two were unlucky, like really good defending. But...
yeah, Campbell's, he needs to get a bit of lift on it, doesn't he? Just any chores of lift on that, it's a goal. It's good defending, but you're disappointed it's not gone in, aren't you?
Yeah, it's Gary Neville and Henning Berg get the blocks in. The Blues are pushing. There's an England 2006 hoarding on the main stand. There's also one for Radio Everton. I think we can state the claim to be Radio Everton now, can't we?
Yeah, it makes you Daz Griffiths, doesn't it?
Oh, is that him?
I'd imagine so.
I don't know. He's quite a big player in the sports media world, isn't he?
He is. We'll
stick with the Good Times Everton podcast. It's fine. David Unsworth then crosses to the far post. It's about 10 minutes left here. Barmby tries to pick out Campbell with a header, but Yapstam gets in the way and gets his big baldy dome on it and heads it right past Mark Bosnich. And it's an unexpected point for the Blues on the first day.
Yeah, I remember being really happy after the game, you know, as happy as you can be with the draw, being enthusiastic, not because of the point, but the display. I mean, the previous season on Halloween, we got a bit of a chasing off United, who, you know, were an exceptional side at the time. Not just treble winners, but this is the second of three seasons on the spin. They win the title. And this season and the next, they win out of canter, don't they? They have it sewn up really early on in the season because they're just the streets ahead of everyone else. So it was a really dog performance. And you got to give Walter credit, because any team that can get a result against United with Mitch Ward on the wing is not doing too bad, in my opinion, because that's one of the things that stood out to me when I think about this game, is he had quite a decent game, and there were terribly few of them I remember during his tenure at Goodison. I think Walter, he's changed system coming into this season as well, hasn't he? The previous season he played 3 or 5 at the back, however you want to term it. He goes to the 4 a lot more this season. I think it shows a better style of play, personally.
Yeah, we basically play 4-4-2 in almost every game. The next game after this is away at Villa Park. Franny Jeffers has apologised by this point, and he's back on the bench. There's a red card for John Collins.
2 yellows, wasn't it?
It was. And we lose 3-0. We look really good in all white.
The only time we wear the away kit all season as well, isn't it? Because it's the third kit all the other away games. And
that's right, yeah.
I remember John Gregory coming out, and Joe, when manager magnanimous when they've won, John Gregory saying, John Collins is a gentleman, he should never have been sent off. But it's a bit of a carbon copy of the previous season at Villa, isn't it? If you remember on the Monday night when Clellan gets 2 quick yellows and we get humbled 3-0. So that kit in Villa Park tended to follow a bit of a pattern, didn't it?
And then it's another tough away game at Spurs. Jeffers starts this one, he replaces Hutchison. Dave Watson's put out of his misery. Richard Dunn comes in for him at right back, and David Weir moves across the centre half. Unsworth is the captain, and he scores 2 penalties. Both of those are won by Jeffers. But we lose to late goals from the Norwegians, Øyvind Leonardsen and Stefan Iversen. So it's 1 point from 3 games, but there's 3 tough games. I don't think anyone's really judging Walter or the team based on this.
We've got
2 very winnable ones coming up. Southampton at home, so we're in the bottom 3. As I said, no panic. We score 4 in both of these games. Richard Goff gets his first against the Saints. He heads home a left-footed David Weir cross. There's a comedy own goal from Klaus Lundberg fan as we scored.
I was so excited to talk about this when we said we were going to do this on the pod, because it's one of my favourite ever goals for the comedy.
Yeah.
It's just, he just tries to poke it away from Campbell and lobs the keeper, his own keeper, from the edge of his own box. It's an absolutely calamitous. Now, I had an unusually good view for this in the Wimbledon game. My dad used to work in sales, and he worked with a guy who did sales part-time, and was also John Collins' minder, we'll call it. And we actually were on John Collins' tickets in the main stand for both this and the Wimbledon game. So I had a bit of a different perspective on it, and I just remember seeing Ludwig van hit it, and Susie did, you're like, oh my God, that's going to go in. It was such a needless own goal, because Campbell had a lot to do with a bouncing ball. I don't think he was guaranteed to get to score.
Oh, and at this point, he still hasn't scored this season. He will eventually get his first of the season, and it's after some of the worst defending that you'll ever see from Southampton. It's like a FIFA glitch. The attacking players just ripped Southampton apart that day, and it's good to see. Wimbledon, it's 4-0. First clean sheet for the team. Hutchison's back in the centre midfield, and he's the captain, and he looks really good.
Yeah.
Campbell and Jeffers are playing very well together up front. They've got a lot of chemistry, picking up from where they left off the previous season. They both score in both games. Barnby's playing in almost a free role off the left. David Unsworth misses a pen. He does score the rebound, but he looks really annoyed with himself. He's got a goal, but he's fuming that he's missed that penalty. It's not like him at all. And then there's a good chance for our first away win of the season at Pride Park versus Derby.
Can I just take you back, sorry, Kev?
Yeah,
to the Wimbledon game. Sorry. The Wimbledon game, the Southampton game, are like, it's weird. They're two of my favourite memories as an Evertonian. It sounds so stupid. It was a lovely summer in 1999. And I went to both matches with my dad. We had a wonderful time. The Wimbledon game I particularly enjoyed because, being in there that I am, there was a girl who was sat by us in that main stand, spec we were sat, who had a spare team sheet. So I actually had a team sheet from that game, which I really treasured, and put my programme collection somewhere that's in our loft now. And I just remember having a lovely night with dad. The summer holidays were coming to the end, and we ended up getting a lock-in in the Brick. Watch a match of the day. I don't know if you remember, not just that we won that night in the pouring rain, but that was Ruud Gullit's last ever game as Newcastle manager that night, when he dropped Ferguson and Shearer, and they got done by Sunderland in like a torrential downpour at St James's Park.
Yeah.
And we ended up, it was like, because it was the last weekend, last week before you go to school, we were out about 2 a.m. and got a cab home. I was only 12. I wasn't drinking anything, but just had a brilliant night. And I just wanted to say that because it obviously we've not been we've not been very successful in the time you and I have been going to watch Everton, and it's always a little past to stood out for me. No, we've had good times, obviously, but
no, we haven't.
Yes, we have. We've had good times. We've had good times, and this particular patch was one I really enjoyed.
Well, having a good time in England at this time is Esteban Fuertes, who's on a fake work permit. So the Argentinian striker gets his first and only goal for Derby County in a 1-0 win. We've turned up there with a bit of confidence, but it looks unlikely that we'll get anything when Richard Dunn is sent off after 25 minutes. The referee is Andy Derso. Yeah, so it's a controversial winner from Fuertes. There's rumours that Derby later offer a replay for this game and that Walter Smith turns it down. I've never seen this confirmed. It's probably just a stick to, you know, beat Walter with, because he did have a lot of his detractors. So it turns out that there's quite a complex issue with his contract and, you know, third ownership. Jim Smith seems to think that Fuertes has got an Italian heritage and that he doesn't need a work permit for that reason. Basically, it's the agents are on a big ruse here. You know, they're doing whatever they can to get their man to Derby and to make some money. They end up recouping their money as well, Derby. You know, it's literally the only thing that he does is to score a winning goal against us.
It's incredibly Everton, that, isn't it? You know, I know a lot of people say that, but a guy who's not in the country legally, netting his only goal against the Toffees. And also, Derby was struggling going to this. They'd been mid-table for a couple of seasons, but they had a really poor season, a poor start to it. And I suppose it was just a kick in the teeth, wasn't it, for him to get the only goal of the game. But I don't know about you at this point. It feels like when we lose away from home, you've almost come a little bit numb to it because we've been poor on the road for a few years, haven't we?
Jim Smith talked about a conspiracy around this in his book. He thinks that someone grasped Fuertes up to the authorities. He said that the immigration officials scrutinised every single detail of his passport, that he used infrared. Rumours that it could be
doing the job.
Yeah, there's rumours that it's his own agent even that's done it, because you know, if Derby has to sell him, then he might be getting more commission. We have a better away day next time out. We're off to Hillsborough. There's something happens before this game that my mum, who I went to this game with, still insists that it's the funniest thing she's ever seen. So we're outside the ground beforehand, close to the players' entrance, and a fella named Bob, who drove us that day, is standing with us. It's probably about 45 minutes before kickoff. And the Sheffield Wednesday Owl, you know, the big mascot, Owly the mascot, or Wednesday the Owl, or something like that, it's called, I can't remember. But, you know, you'll probably be able to picture it. It's just this massive, ridiculous brown owl in a Sheffield Wednesday kit with huge football boots on. And yet he's... So it just kind of, like, wanders out of the player's entrance and looks like whoever's inside there is looking for someone, and just heads kind of swiveling. And the top part of the costume, the head, has got this like tuft at the back. So Bob decides to grab hold of the tuft and just like yank it down so that the mascot head just goes backwards towards Bob. And he's laughing, thinking it's dead funny. And then the mascot turns around and just fucking boots him in the shin. Like, full on, though, like as hard as he can. And Bobby was like, you know, quite a big fella. Like, I suspect he was probably like a hooligan in the 70s or something. He's just going like, ah, you bastard. And like, there's a couple of like employees, you know, the usual types you see at the match in suits with lanyards, and that just kind of like usher the aisle back into the player's entrance. It's one of those moments that don't just return to you for weeks afterwards and always makes you laugh.
Yeah, I bet it was. Imagine that if you bomb and you go back home. How was your day, my dear? Oh, yeah. Got into a fight with someone in a giant owl costume.
What's that bruise on your shin?
Well, there's a story.
Yeah. So, Wednesday at bottom at this point, and Everton make light work of them. We've got that yellow kit that you mentioned before. I think it looks really good. It's vibrant.
It's not as good as the previous seasons, but it's decent. I do like Umbro's kind of attitude here of it being a third kit and a training kit, because you see the players in it in pre-season actually training in that kit. They don't release it until later in the summer, but if you, I remember that the echo footage pictures at the time, I think they were on the dunes out in Crosby, you could see the players running in it, but they actually wore it as a training kit quite a bit that season.
Okay, right, I wasn't aware of that.
So, Umbro went through a phase, they did it with Everton and United, they might have done it with Chelsea as well, where they had third kits that doubled up as training kits, but I think it was just to usher in the new age of third kits. But it actually was a kit I didn't mind at the time. We'll discuss this another time. The 98-99 third is probably my favourite Everton kit. But actually, when you look at the footage, this kit's all right. It holds up really well.
Yeah, and we go on to have a really good record in it as well. So, Abel Xavier comes in for his debut. There's goals in the first half from Barnby and Scott Gemmell. And then we go to Oxford away in the first leg of the second round of the League Cup. You know, it's with all the kind of clamour in recent years about teams are playing too many games, it is a bit strange to think about playing two legs this early on in the competition.
That said, I mean, this is the round where European teams don't play, do they?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
It still seems like a bit much, like we could just have an away game at Oxford here and that too.
Yeah.
Walter makes 8 changes. There's a goal for Danny Cadamatri.
Yeah.
And it's actually Steve Simonson's debut for Everton over the year after he signed. Quite a big feat from Tranmere Rovers.
He's got his little goatee at this point as well, hasn't he? Got that little renegade goatee he was rocking at the beginning of the season.
He looks like the Lucky Charms fella off Austin Powers.
Mate, he looks like he's going to an Ash gig or something. Like to some mid-90s pop band.
So, yeah, Teddy Phelan plays on the left wing in this game.
Brutal, that.
Again, another one to the strange one to think of Teddy Phelan being around in this season. But, yeah, I think
the man with no ankles.
I think it's his only appearance before he's loaned out.
I think he might have played in the home game, but I'm not sure. He might not. I'm not
maybe
sure.
He did. So, we get a 1-0. We get a 1-1 draw there. Kind of match you with the goal. And then it's back to Goodison for the visit to West Ham. Javier Margas has got what's left of his hair dyed claret and blue. I don't know if you spotted this, but do you know what he looks like? All right, well, I'm going to send you a picture of him now. Because I thought, who does he look like here? And then it just occurred to me, like, straight away.
Go on.
He looks like George Bush in The Simpsons.
He really does, yeah, he does, yeah. I do remember him trying to play offside and putting his hand up and saying, any more questions, bearing in mind I've already explained about my hair.
He also said that, he also told Frank Jeffers that there'd be lots of trouble.
Yeah, apologies for the listeners who aren't Simpsons fans, there will be a lot of Simpsons content in this as well, because we are big Simpsons fans as well as Everton fans, aren't we, Kev?
I make no apology for that. And I don't. Think
I'm just being biased. I don't really apologise.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't think your apology there was sincere either.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
And the Good Times Everton podcast is nothing if not sincere.
Yeah, and with good cause.
And with good cause. So I can only imagine the stick that he gets from the paddock. It's a good job that he didn't play on the flank, you know, or fullback. He's quite safe over at centre half. Franny Jeffers scores with a really weak shot that squirms on the shack of his lot.
So poor from his lock, that is.
Yeah. The defender itself is bad as well.
It is.
But,
I think the only thing that was good about West Ham in this game is the kit. I like the kit.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, the Doc Martens.
The kit was quite smart. The Doc Martens feeler one with the white with the navy patches. Yeah. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, I agree. The commentator says that the keeper turns to jelly. And Richard Dunn's ears prick up at the mention of that.
He runs over.
with a bowl and a spoon. We leapfrog the Hammers into 7th. Hutchison and Unsworth go off injured. They'll both sit out the midweek game, and that's the second leg against Oxford.
Bad night.
Walter makes 9 changes for this one. In come Alex Cleland, Phil Jevons, Adam Artery, Peter Dane, and Gareth Farrelly.
I remember Farrelly because I went and Farrelly got a really good reception because it was the first time he played. In fact, I think it's the only appearance he makes after the Coventry game, isn't it? Because he's had injuries all the previous season. He's gone from number 17 to wearing number 30 on the back now. He got like a decent round of applause. But I remember going to that game with the school and being in the family enclosure and taking it quite personally, the result, which in retrospect is idiotic, to be frank.
Well, a couple of things. Mitch Ward is the captain.
Yeah, there's that as well. I remember saying that to my dad. I was upset. He went, lad, Mitch Ward was captain. They weren't taking this that seriously.
No. It's a weird one when there's like other players on the pitch. Like, you know, you'd expect maybe David Lee would get it there.
Yeah.
Campbell and Jeffers come on at half-time. Barmy comes on later on, but it's to no avail. It's a Joey Beecham goal in the 12th minute. And that's it. So it's out of the cup. The attendance there is 10,006.
I was one of those 10,000, were you?
I was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was. I remember I was in the family coach. It was weird how much blue there was. You could just see like seats everywhere, couldn't you?
And this was before they brought in the new seats. Like, they're all really faded and look horrible. I was in the park end for this one. I think it's one of the only times we've lost when I've sat there.
All right, okay.
Yeah, so next up, it's over to Anfield. And in the build-up for this one, Sky Sports do quite a nice little package with Walter Smith and Gerard Houllier.
Where, it's a beauty.
Yeah, they're playing a game of Sabutio against each other.
That, isn't it? Yeah.
It's really good. I was watching some footage the other day from the Sabutio, like, Sabutio Home Nations or World Cup or something, and it just looks so hard. Like,
yeah. I was more of a pro-action man. I had pro-action as a kid because at least that was magnetic, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think I had that as well. Sabutio was great for a collector, and it looked fantastic.
Yeah, it's the aesthetic is unrivaled, isn't it?
Yeah, but to actually play, it's just dead hard. And I think Walter beats him, doesn't he?
Not for the first time this week, is it?
This one's on Sky on Monday night. I went to this one. So,
lucky him.
Going back to Mitch Ward, by the way, he's the fifth captain that we've had so far this season. And we're in September.
So you've had Watson, you've had Ward, you've had Unsworth, Hutchison.
Yeah.
And let me guess. Who else has won? Is Gough won it at some point, even though he's new?
I think it's Gough takes it, but it might be during a game, you know, after a substitution.
Yeah, someone's come off. Yeah.
I think maybe it's after Hutchison goes off injured. So, yeah, this was an eventful one. Got a lot of notes here. So, in the fifth minute, Franny Jeffers plays Kevin Campbell through. Vegard Hegem has the cheek to stand there with his hand up towards the linesman. Like, Carragher's playing Campbell literally 6 yards onside.
He's miles on, isn't he? There's no doubt about it whatsoever.
He hits a really cool finish with his laces under Sander Westerveld for 1-0. There's a couple of blues in the front row of the car.
Just properly jump up, don't
you? Oh, my God. They go absolutely mental.
Lad in denim, isn't it? Just properly goes for it in the front row, having none of it, is he?
I've got a picture of him that freeze framed it. Yeah, to send this to you, I've even circled him because it tickled me like how much hang time he gets on one of his jumps.
Every time I watch the goal, that's someone that strikes me. He's like, there's not. It's not even like a little one. He properly goes for it, doesn't he? Absolutely leaping round. Especially, I could get it if it was late on, but it's so early in the game. Yeah. It's your hand, isn't it? 5 minutes in.
I mean, the double denim, the hang time, it's perfect. The away bounce is also lively. The camera's cut to that. Westerveld makes a good save from Jeffers header in the 20th minute. But really on top here. There'll be more on these two shortly. The home fans sound really tetchy. Houllier's team aren't clicking at this time. Liverpool are 12th in the league. Gerrard parries out a Jamie Redknapp shot that's going wide. It goes straight to Robbie Fowler, but he blazes the rebound well over. Fowler then hits a shot from range that Gerrard should catch easily, but he doesn't. Richard Gough dawdles badly and is robbed by Michael Owen. Owen's surrounded by defenders, but rather than shoot, he waits until one of them attempts to tackle and absolutely throws himself to the ground. Now, I've got a clip of Alan Parry's commentary here. Owen hits the deck, and then Parry just shouts, penalty. And then a couple of seconds later, he goes, no, he hasn't given it.
I know, that struck me when I was watching the review. He just shouted it like it was dead old pen.
And Owen, and still, Penalty. No.
I remember watching the game back afterwards. You know, he thinks it's a penalty. It's definitely not. Parry says the boos are from the Liverpool fans who feel they've been denied a penalty. But I didn't hear Alan Parry booing. So, you know, maybe he's muted his mic or something like that. His Wikipedia page confirms that he's from Garston, which I never knew.
He's a massive red, yeah. He was involved in Wycombe Wanderers, wasn't he? When they got to the FA Cup semi-finals season after against Liverpool, he was torn because he was a shareholder in Wycombe. But he said, I used to stand on the cop, which when you find that out, it doesn't really surprise you when you listen to his commentary on Liverpool or Everton games.
No, it absolutely shows, especially in this game. He's ridiculous. So, elsewhere in the first half, the deplorable Owen hits Davy Weir with a leg breaker that should get a red card. Mike Riley bombs it, and Owen stays on with a yellow. In the second half, Franny Jeffers misses a great chance for 2-0. Then on 74 minutes, goes through on goal. He's offside, and then he runs into Westerveld, and Westerveld turns round and just bings him on the head.
It's such a pathetic fight.
It's a bad fight. They're both kind of like grabbing each other's faces and throwing like half punches, half slaps. Neither really like lands one apart from Westerveld with that initial. And it is Westerveld who starts it. They're both sent off anyway, no surprise.
He's given no choice, Mike Riley. Has he got up? I don't think he's got any choice, has he?
No. But Julier has used all three of the subs. So Steve Staunton has to go on goal for the last 15 minutes. In injury time, there's another red card because Steven Gerrard can't help himself and he clashes Campbell with a horrible tackle. He's then got the nerve to shake his head as he's trotting off the pitch.
Again, he doesn't give Mike Riley any choice, does he, Kev? It's an outrageous tackle.
It's perfectly timed to wipe Campbell out and stops an attack as well. But yeah, it's just a horrible tackle. It was, you know, there was 10 a penny of them with young Gerrard. He was horrible. And even like the shaking his head as if we can't believe it's a red.
Yeah, it's a disbelief.
Yeah, that
is bad, isn't it?
But I think that's just performative from him. There's 5 minutes of stoppage time, by the way, and that's the first time that I'd ever seen that. I remember that there were like gasps from the away end when that five came up. And then there's a surreal moment. So Barmby nutmegs Redknapp. He should be through on goal from this, but Abel Xavier, who's a centre-half playing on the right wing, has made a run to the same bit of space. Barmby's in, 8 yards out, and it's Xavier who hits it with his left foot. And Steve Staunton makes an outrageous save.
It is. He does so. I remember thinking that he should have scored. But when you look back, because isn't Steve Staunton's not a goalkeeper? It's an unbelievable save.
I couldn't believe it. It matters not, though. It finishes 1-0. And to this day, it's the only time I've seen us win there. Nick Barmby's among like the, you know, some of the wildest celebrations from the players at the end. He's possibly man of the match in this game.
I wouldn't go that far.
Sure you wouldn't.
But in the words of Paulie Gualtieri, funny thing about snakes, that's all I'm going to say about Mr. Nicholas Barmby at this point.
I thought you were going to say, in the end, fuck Nick Barmby.
Also, that does also apply. Yeah, I'm sure that the listeners will come to know that, like a lot of Evertonians, I don't hold them in particularly high regard.
Well, I did actually try and get him on for this episode, you know. Yeah, so I can't wait to get to school the next day. Walter Smith wins Manager of the Month for September and in turn is hexed with a particularly long Manager of the Month curse. It starts off with... Go ahead.
This is when I really started believing in the curse, you know. I remember thinking, because we don't win for so long, do we? I remember thinking, this is definitely a curse because this is the first time since Joe got it, I'd imagine, that an Everton manager's got it.
I don't think Howard won many in 97, 98.
We had a good January, but that was about it, wasn't it?
It's Coventry at home, and understandably, Smith names an unchanged side. Franny Jeffers, who's looking great at the minute, scores within 2 minutes. He gets onto a clever lofted through ball from Barmby. I put that it's the old LB and triangle ball from Pro Evo. Perfect. Yes. Really good goal. And this was in the days when a ban for a red card wouldn't kick in until a week after it happened.
Yeah,
so that's why.
It's not that, is it?
So that's what I thought. I thought, why is Jeffers playing? But that's what it was.
You did have like a grace period, didn't you? 7 days or so, yeah. So.
Yeah, because there's no chance he's getting that appeal.
I remember he got a really good clap. he got quite the clap in the batter.
But he's available for this, but he'll miss the next three. Gary McAllister equalises.
Mr. McAllister.
Yeah, not the last time he'll feature, unfortunately, in this pod, is it?
It's not. He equalises and it ends 1-1. But we do move up a place, up to fifth. Overall, you know, a good start to the season.
It's a controversial moment in this game, though, isn't
it? Is there?
Remember it? Yeah. Don Hutchison was captain, Richard Gough wasn't, and they have an argument, and Hutchison slapped Gough on the pitch.
Right, because I know that Hutchison and Gough didn't get along, and that's probably what ends, you know, resulting in Hutchison leaving the club at the end of the season. And Walter kind of sides with his mate Gough there. And yeah, it rings a bell now that you say it. I wouldn't have remembered which particular game it is, but next up, it's an eventful trip personally for me to Highbury to play Arsenal away a fortnight later. So John Collins scores a brilliant free kick after 16 minutes in off the bar. If you look at the highlights, you might have noticed that you'll see some Arsenal fans behind David Seaman's goal, like standing up and turning around, like there's been an incident, you know, further back. That was me and my mum. So we, true story, we ended up with tickets in the North Bank. And we celebrated the goal. And like, I remember thinking in my head, what am I going to do if we score? But then as soon as it went in, like, we were just up. And, you know, probably unwise, but we're still, it's a woman and a 12-year-old kid. But their fans went mental. Like, fuming, shouting, swearing, spitting at us. The steward came over and, like, grabbed me mum by the arm. She had a big bruise on her arm. Like, it was really scary. And yeah, we got taken out of the ground. The steward there was a prick. He took us round to, like, you know, the kind of the reception at Highbury, and the staff there were much nicer about it, much more sympathetic. They end up taking us into the away end, and it's just as Lee Dixon scores the equaliser.
Mad that Lee Dixon scored against us as well. Goals in Korea.
And Arsenal win it 4-1. During that period where they just always, you know, get battered at Arsenal, the period that has really gone away. Franny Jeffers, who's missing the first game in his 3-match ban, he was on our train back from this. And
oh, had he been in the way end, had he?
I presume so, yeah. He probably had our tickets. Maybe that's why we had to go in the Arsenal end. He didn't really. He was bevied, like, getting off the train, and, like, there was a load of fans, you know, talking to him as we were leaving Lime Street. And one fella said to him, "Hey, Franny, why didn't you twat that Westerveld, lad?" And Jeffers goes, "I'm joking, aren't you? Did you see the size of his hands? They're like fucking shovels." And off he went into town, into the night.
I've seen him in town recently, Franny. I've seen him quite a few times in town, to be fair.
Have you, yeah?
Yeah, we were in the Albert Schenck the other week and he was in there on a date. We'd been to a beer festival. And it looked like he was on a date. We were getting a bit too loud. Well, he might be. I'm speculating he might be a happily married man. So apologies if I've grassed Franny up there. but yeah, I've seen him.
Franny, if you're listening, can you please email goodtimeseventpodcast@gmail.com and clarify that situation for us? We really want to know.
And please do feel free to come on. We'd love to bend your ear.
there's then a mad home game against Leeds.
What a game. I think this is the best game I've ever actually been to. Joe, as a pure game, it's one of the best, if not the best, I've ever been to this.
Well, here's the notes that I made, because after making such long notes about Liverpool and Arsenal, I didn't want to make an extensive ones here, so just jotted some bullet points. I've got golden goal. So I assume that means that there's an announcement that the golden goal time is whatever, because I remember that they used to do that at the game. And if you had the minute of time that was on there, then you'd win a cash prize or something.
Don't be a cop, I'd be a winner. The fella sells outside the megastore.
That was it, yeah. What else did he say? The other few of them, the other few little sound bites.
Yeah. Get your Everton golden goal ticket. Don't be a cop, I'd be a winner. That little fella outside the megastore every game without fail.
Yeah, he had another one as well, and I can't remember what it was. Again, if any listeners know, get in touch with us.
If he's listening, come on, yeah, come and do an interview. We'll happily speak to you.
He's quite old, wasn't he?
All right, mate. We're not...
20, okay, 25 well... years ago, like
just his family.
I know we're optimistic at times, but yeah, I've written PG-13 buffoon for cool goal.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, it's not the first time this season he concedes a cross, but it's terrible. And I think you know you've said that, but more, I want to go back to the first goal in this game. Both Campbell's goals are good, but I love this first one, that curling finish into the far corner. I mean, Hutchison's ball for the second is great, but that curling finish, I just remember as a young lad just loving that goal and being really enamoured with it. It was just such a good finish. I don't think it gets the credit it deserves, but yeah, Kewell's is it's not great from Paul Gerrard because you see at this point, he never comes off his line, does he? And he still manages to get beaten by a cross, which is even more impressive, I suppose, in a way. Although he's pretty good this season, Paul Gerrard, despite his flaws. I think he's pretty good this season. Is that what your thoughts are?
Yeah, I just thought that he was a buffoon for this goal. It just looks ridiculous. He's not far enough off his line to get beaten by a cross like that.
No, it's you shouldn't be getting beaten by a cross that near to you. I agree with that.
I wrote Unsworth left wing. Hits look massive on everyone.
Yeah.
Ian Hart's fringe. It's, you know, it's not massively acceptable at the time, but he had his Barnett. Davey Weir first goal.
Yeah. It's his face, isn't it?
I think this was when I really started to like Weir around this time.
Yeah, I'd really liked him. I mean, he's undergone one of Walter's renegade squad number changes from 18 to 14 this season, hasn't he? But I think we had done okay when he played it wing back, but I think once he was part of a two in the middle, he really flourished pretty quickly, didn't he?
Yeah,
and it was very clear that he was a good footballer. But I suppose this is probably on your notes this game. I don't like to give too much credit to opposition players, but Michael Pritchard's goal it's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought he looked like a quality player this season as well.
He looked so good, didn't he? It's mad to think he wasn't even the first choice of Sunderland because of how good Phillips and Quinn were. And they've been like in the Championship. And then Leeds spent £6 million. You think about it in real terms. Leeds spent £6 million quid on a backup striker from the Championship. And he was unbelievable for them.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. And I remember during this game, before Woodgate makes it 4-3 to them, they won a free kick in the build-up. And my dad really didn't like Darren Huckabee. He remembered, and Kev Campbell touched on this actually when he talked about the Coventry game the previous season in the league. He dived to get Materazzi sent off, didn't he? His second yellow. I remember my dad was screaming that Huckabee was a diver. He dives, gets a free kick, which we defend, but then they score off the corner. And I don't know why, it was just stuck with me that Darren Huckabee's a cheat. So, yeah, that was just my view on it. Cheat's probably a bit strong, but he was... guilty of gamesmanship, I should say.
Well, he'll have his chance to respond to that, I'm sure. We bring on Tommy Johnson for his debut. He's been signed as a short-term loan while Jeffers is out suspended. And Leeds at top of the league after this one. So it's off to the Riverside next to see out October. Campbell scores in the third minute. He does a Joey Tribbiani dance with John Collins.
And yeah, he does, doesn't he?
Kev looks cool, but John doesn't.
No, I don't. But I think John probably thinks he does.
Yeah. And, you know, good-looking fella, John. But
yeah, suave off the pitch, I must say. Always well turned out, even now when you see him on TV and that. He's always well turned out, isn't he?
But it did strike me that his hair looks exactly like John Travolta's in Face Off. So then it got me thinking about...
Nicolas Cage's?
What was that, sorry?
Do you mean Nicolas Cage's hair?
Don't confuse me. But it got me thinking about doing an Everton version of Face Off with John Collins and Don Hutchison.
Yeah, because you have him... Don's definitely got a bit of Nick Cage about him, yeah.
If we're casting, they're the two obvious ones.
Yeah, I think that's really good. That's really good. I don't know if Don's as manic as Nick Cage, but there's a little bit in it, isn't there?
So, Andy Derso sends Davey Weir off, and we lose 2-1. I remember someone at the match calling him Andy the Arsehole after this, which I quite liked. A around this time, speaking of weir, England and Scotland played each other in the Euro 2000 playoffs.
Yeah.
And this is around the time that I got to go into Belfield. So I just like, I had no time for England at this point. Like they had, you know, they had like Michael Owen and Gerrard and some others. And we, Scotland had Davy Weir and Don Hutchison. So like, I was supporting them. I wanted Scotland to win. I had this like Scotland plastic face mask that I just picked up, you know, in St. John's Market or something. And I took it, took it into to Belfield with me, thinking I could get it signed by a couple of the players. So one thing I remember is one of the staff, and I forget who it was, but talking about you getting this cold plunge. And I'm like, what are they talking about? And then they tell me, oh, yeah, you know, anyone new that comes in gets a cold plunge on the first day. So you'll have to get that. And it turns out that it's like they fill up the communal bath with cold water, and any like new signing or new staff member just gets thrown in it on the first morning.
Fully clothed, or do you have to strip down?
No, no, fully clothed, to be fair.
Yeah.
But like, I'm shitting myself. Like, they're going to throw a 12-year-old kid into this big cold bath. So I go into the room. It's on the left at Belfield as you went in, and I see the bath, but it's empty. And whichever member of staff it was, just like, what happened to the plunge? One of the cleaners was like, oh, we emptied it. We thought it was from yesterday. Like, they actually set one up for me. So he didn't throw me into the empty pit. I got away with it.
I mean, that'd have been funnier, wouldn't it? Just like the yell.
Oh, my God.
You can't get you out.
I was terrified, and I was really relieved that it didn't happen. But yeah, I got to go out like and watch the train for a bit. I walk in, and my mask is just ripped up into about like 8 pieces. And David Unsworth is standing there. And he says to one of the other players, hey, could have done to Jimmy Martin's mask. So Unsworth thinks that because England and Scotland are playing each other, that Jimmy Martin has brought in his mask as like a wind-up. And as an England fan, he just rips it up. So whoever it was I'm with says, oh no, that's Kevin's mask. And it's Unsworth looking mortified. Like, so yeah, he was apologetic about it, to be fair. I wasn't bothered. I thought it was really fun.
No, I think that's part of it, isn't it? I think, you know, a little bit of insight into sorts of things that go on at Belfield.
Yeah, and you know, it was, I suppose, something bad had to happen to me once the cold plunge was out the window.
Mate, a ripped up mask or a cold plunge, I think I know.
Yeah.
The Good Times Everton podcast is brought to you in association with Down the Hatch. Based on Duke Street in Liverpool City Centre, Down the Hatch is the number one spot for all your vegan junk food needs. You can find them on Instagram at Down the Hatch LIV, on X, formerly known as Twitter, at DTHLIV. Their website is downthehatchliv.co.uk.
It's a cold away game next. It's up to St James's Park for Newcastle. Alex Clellan gets a rare start. It's actually on the right of midfield.
I liked him, you know. I thought Clelland, he obviously had a lot of injuries, but I thought he was a decent player, Clelland.
Yeah, he was okay. Probably expected a bit more of him when he signed, but I expected more of Walter Smith as well, I think, as we all did.
I think that's fair to say, yeah.
Duncan Ferguson.
He wasn't allowed to sign him, was he? Kendall actually signed him, and then Walter came in.
That's right, yeah. Walter sold him. Well, when a top player like Alec comes available on a free, you go and get him.
The Pearl of Perth.
So yeah, Duncan Ferguson starts up front for the Geordies. It still looks really weird seeing him in their kit even now.
Celebrates that pen far too much for my liking.
Well, yeah, but he's playing for them now, isn't he? So he gets into a fight with Don Hutchison. Let's say a fight. It's a bit of a skirmish later on in the game. Campbell scores again from a Barnby cross from the right. The cross and the diving header are both superb.
Really good goal. And he loves it up there, Kev, doesn't he? Because that's like the second of 3 seasons on the spin. He nets up there and wins, isn't it?
And he does a dart celebration this time. He's jibbed off the dance. It's 1-1, and it's another 1-1 draw a week later at home to Chelsea, and it's Campbell again. The one-time Joe Royal target, Tor Andre Flo, scores a really sickling equaliser in injury time.
I was so upset about that, because we played really well that game. I think we were first on match of the day. Kevin Keegan was in the stands. Everton were playing some really good football at this point. And Campbell's goal, it's well worked between him and Jeffers. A lovely finish to Wrongfoot De Hoy with his left foot. But the Flo goal was not just so avoidable, it was so undeserved. We were the better team that day in America. It was a real sickening, that wasn't mean. I know injury time equalisers inevitably are, but it really felt like a defeat that game, didn't it? Based on how we played at the time.
Yeah, it did. And it's also just like the really avoidable goal as well.
It's a good finish, but we have about three opportunities to get rid of it, don't we?
It's just a really like unforced error from Cleland and Dunn. You end up like kicking the ball at each other under no pressure at all. There's lots of 99 Everton bars fuming in the park end. So that's kind of reassuring to see that you know, yeah, still going
some
on back
don't
in the day.
Change, really.
Exactly.
I'm now one of those Everton dars in the park end, not the paddock. But yeah,
doesn't count if you've got a dog, like.
No, I'm just saying because I'm approaching middle age. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying I have a child. I'm just talking about generally as a term.
Okay, right. Not to get all Brian Griffin on you, you know.
Well, you are getting a bit Brian Griffin on me and then digging out a dog as Brian Griffin, which is very odd, but we'll
that's true, yeah. There's then a turgid 0-0 draw at home to an Aston Villa team playing in stripes this season.
The only thing I really remember about this game, I remember it being a terrible game. The only thing that I thought about is, and there's a lot of unusual quirks in 1999-2000, it's really weird to have your second game of the season against someone in November, isn't it? And have both fixtures out the way against them so early.
Yeah, I didn't think of that actually, yeah.
And it's because we play United a few weeks later and both those games are out the way before you've even got to Christmas, which is unusual.
Unusual, but probably for the best. At this point, we're...
That would definitely be great. 2 points from the four games.
At this point, it's 2 months since we last won that game at Anfield. So a trip to Old Trafford, like you just said, is not exactly what we need next. But we take everyone by surprise when we take the lead early on through some clever work from John Collins that allows Unsworth to cross for Jeffers and he taps in. It's his first goal for 2 months.
Goal. It's another good goal. I think he touched on earlier. I think one thing that was refreshing about this season, and it kind of shows how momentum from a previous season can help. We started playing good football at the end of 98-99. We're playing some really nice stuff at this point. Playing some really nice football.
Yeah, we are. Unfortunately, we're 5-1 down before the hour mark.
Ollie got to socialise other ideas about our visit.
Because Ollie's at the wheel with four goals. Tony Grant comes on with 10 minutes left.
Is that his last Everton appearance? I
it must be. It must be.
He's wearing number 24 at this point. He's gone because he's been bombed out by Walter, hasn't he?
It's a cue for everyone to just kind of beat the traffic.
I really like Tony Grant for Wordsworth.
We get a bit of a rarity next week when the FA Cup third round takes place in December. Now, I thought, yeah, and I tried to find out why, and it's just some kind of vague explanation from the FA about fixture congestion and.
I think, and this is just my theory, because don't forget, this is the year United pull out the FA Cup.
Yeah,
I think they moved it round because the fourth round you come to is on my birthday, which is the beginning of January, and the fifth round is the end of January. I think they tried to move it round to appease United and hope that United would stay in the Cup.
I do as well. That was me thinking. I was just trying to find some evidence that confirmed that. But yeah, like
no evidence. I just remember that wonderful Daily Mirror front page of all the like lottery winners and Simon West and all random people saying why United shouldn't leave the FA Cup.
Amazing. So we're down to Exeter away. I went to this one. It's a 1 o'clock kickoff in Devon.
No thanks.
And I was up at 4 a.m. and fucking finished
for nothing.
No goals.
Like game.
Also, as well, I remember when I got back when I went into school on the Monday, a lad I know who's an Evertonian told me that he went to watch the screening of this. He showed it on a big screen at Goodison. He said that for the entirety of half time, the camera was just on me in the stand. Like there was a little bit of like we had behind the goal, but then also a section on the main stand at the side, and I was there, and I had this like bright yellow night coat on that you'd have loved it right up your street. And he said the camera was just on you for like 15 minutes. So I just started to feel really, really paranoid after he told me that.
I'm surprised by that. I would have thought that would have massaged that massive ego of yours.
I just think it's a strange, like, we're
making no accusations towards any cameraman at this point, as attractive a child as Kevin may have, may not have been.
No, I wasn't saying anything like that. I don't know what you're on about. Just think it's an odd choice. Joe McMoore's on for his debut. He's joined for New England Revolution. We finally win our first game in nearly 3 months. It's away at Watford. It's their first season in the Premier League. They're in their yellow shirt with red shorts and sock template that I always think is much preferable to when you wear black shorts and black socks.
I agree. I actually think, I know it's just the template for quite a few of the Cox Ball Thief kits this season. It's quite a smart kit.
It was like I know you didn't watch Dream Team, but it was basically the same version of Harchester United. They just had it in purple and white.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I've seen enough of Dream Team to know that they would have whatever last season's the Cox Ball Thief kit was.
Exactly. I think they won the FA Cup season before.
Watford or Harchester?
Harchester. Definitely not Watford. One of the players got sniped on the pitch after full time.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that. Something with the chairman's wife, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was sticking it to Linda Block. So Big Jerry got a sniper behind the scoreboards, and he had some doubts at the last minute and tried to stop it, but he was unsuccessful.
Too late. The wheels are in motion.
Yeah. Poor Luis Samuel Rodriguez, RIP. So yeah, it's Barnby and Hutchison with first half goals. Unsworth scores
well. Work goals as well. Really well work goals, both of them.
Yeah. Unsworth scores a pen late on for 3-1, and it's a chance of jingle bells in the away end. Walter Smith names a full team for the replay against Exeter 4 days before Christmas. He looks like he's learned from the Oxford debacle that he doesn't
matter. I didn't go to this. This is the only competitive game I missed at Goodison this season. I think just with the proximity to Christmas and stuff like that, you know, I think it was just, yeah, it was a bit of a stretch at the time, wasn't it, for people?
Yeah, I mean, there's less than 17,000 in attendance again, you know. Yeah, it's lower league opposition than that, and it's only a replay. But if it was happening today, it could possibly double that.
It does show the changes. I never missed that now, but you know, I think it was just sad times. It was just one of those things.
Well, those who are there watch us labour through a 1-0 win. Barnby with the goal late on. Walter doesn't make any subs in this game, despite it being, you know, despite the fixture pile up, and he's got Joe McMoore on the bench as well. He doesn't come on. The Exeter goalie is wearing tracky bottoms, which is a nice touch. Yeah. And then Peter Reid Sunderland, who are also newly promoted, they're next up at Goodison Park on Boxing Day. They're going really well. They're actually third in the league at this point, but they're without top scorer Kevin Phillips, and that's a bit ominous for them, and they get battered. Don Hutchison scores 2 at the park end. There's a fella, Hutchison and a few of the other players, kind of go into that front bit of the park end to celebrate with some of the fans, and one of them like jumps forward and his glasses just get knocked off his head, and that's the last you see of those spectacles. So poor fella.
Two good goals, makes them both well.
Really good, yeah. And he seems to enjoy them as a boyhood Newcastle fan. Like,
yeah,
he keeps looking over to the away end. He shouts "fuck off" at them at one point.
I remember that next season.
And then there's goals for Campbell, Jeffers, and a first Everton goal for Mark Bembridge.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the point about playing good football, Goth plays a lovely run and pass from Goth for Jeffers. It's a good ball from Jeffers for Pembridge's goal. But I just want to say, I said before, I really enjoyed Campbell's goal against Leeds. His goal in this game, I don't think I really got the credit it deserved, because it's such an unbelievable touch and then spin and then just put it in the bottom corner.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we were coasting in the game at that point, but yeah, it was just... It was really good play. It was just really good striking play. I thought it was a lovely goal.
Yeah, you're right. The commentator keeps a lot of praise on Campbell for that goal as well.
Yeah, it's not even a great, particularly good ball into me. It's all of his own making.
Well, it's 5-0. It's ideal Boxing Day home game. But then at Bradford, 2 days later, we get a 0-0 draw at Valley Parade. It's a bit disappointing. Stuart McCall and Peter Beagrie play that day for the Bantams.
And for everyone who doesn't know, Peter Beagrie is one of Kev's favourite ever Everton players. He used to have him on his kit.
Yeah, unfortunately, we won't get into that because we won't be covering the 93-94 season.
So that's why we have to make every point that Kev loves Peter Beagrie.
Yeah, well, this was back before Liam was supporting Everton. But if he was, I think he'd have been as enamoured with cartwheels, backflips as I was.
Kev said he just loved people who turned inside out and didn't cross the ball.
I like people who take someone on and then go back and take them on again. It was all about that. Well, yeah, I had 11 Beagrie on my shirt when he left, and then my mum, bless her, had a mate who was like a textilist, and got her to stick a like a box over the name, but it was a white box. So I just she couldn't even get a blue one. It was just like I just had the number 11 with this big massive white rectangle above it. I was like, yeah, I'm probably not gonna wear this anymore, but
yeah. We look at it, that was the folly, I suppose, if you get kits for two seasons, getting names on the back, wasn't it?
Oh, I,
you know.
Wasn't the last time that'll happen either, and we will get into that at some point.
Yeah.
It's about the line. But yeah, the first game of the new millennium, it's on Sky, we're at home to Leicester. They've got Tony Cotty up front with Matt Elliott, who's usually a centre back. But Elliott scores two in the first half.
Yeah, he does. And a weird little quirk at Leicester this season that I remember noticing at the time is they have two kit makes, so they've just signed some kind of deal with the Coq Sportif, so their away kit is the Coq Sportif, which they wear, yeah. But they're still keeping their home kit, which was in-house brand from Fox Leisure. Really weird choice by Sky to put this game on, because although there's four goals, it's a forgettable game, isn't it?
Yeah, it feels like one of them, though, where, like they do with the first day of the season, they probably think people are going to watch it regardless of what game they put on, so...
Yeah, the programme was big because that's when they started the Everton Giants, wasn't it? So it was like a big special programme with the Navy cover and the badge on. I remember they announced, like, you know, I remember reading about Sam Chedsko, who was like the Everton Giant from the Tens, and he changed the law about dribbling from corners because he did it and we scored, and the rest said you can't do that. He said it's not on the rule book. So I just remember that sort of minutiae from it. But that I think that speaks volumes to the quality of the game. I mean, are we giving this goal to Davy Weir, or are we saying it's Hutchison's?
It's on the record as Don Hutchison's.
Yeah, Weir hits the shot, and I don't think it's going to go in unless it hits Don, is it?
It doesn't matter if it hits the player on the same team, it's their goal.
I know. It's not. I just love David Weir. I love Don Hutchison as well, but I love David Weir.
I think it's better to give it to a forward player. We'll give Don the benefit of the doubt there.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
But yeah, Elliott's goals are in between that Hutchison goal and an Unsworth penalty. It's conceded by the just unfortunate Frank Sinclair. Trouble just follows him, doesn't it? We then beat Birmingham in the fourth round of the FA Cup. It's two penalties from Unsworth this time.
It is. I'd like to speak slightly about this because it was my 13th birthday, this game.
Okay.
And my dad got tickets through Ticketmaster because the club was doing it at the time. The club put us in the wrong bit and they forgot to announce my name at half time. So my dad made a complaint. And
is that what he told you?
No, he definitely did, because a few days later, I got a letter from Everton with signed pictures of Paul Gerrard, Kevin Campbell, Don Hutchison, Francis Jeffers, and one other player. I can't remember what it was. It wasn't Barmy, but one of the other players. And we got an apology on the next week on the tannoy saying, sorry, you missed it last week. And we got free tickets to the fifth round game against Preston.
Okay.
That's how good he is at complaining.
Barmy dives for the first penalty. No doubt about it. Unsworth makes a point of showing the badge to the Gladys when he scores, and he must.
Yeah, it's like he's been a needle, isn't it? I thought it was saying something there.
I think he was probably getting some stick during this game from the home fans. Campbell's definitely fouled for the second. Unsworth scores, and it's 2-0. We then have our 300th Premier League game. It's a home again, and it's a draw again. It's 2-2 versus Tottenham. Joe Max Moore gets his first goal. It's in the 92nd minute, and it rescues a point for us. Kev Campbell got the other. It's Dave Watson's last ever appearance for the Blues, and it's his last of 528, which puts him third on the all-time list.
And the second goal deflects off him because Dave is a legend of the club, but his legs are going a bit at this point, aren't they? You know, it's just time's caught up with him a little bit at this juncture.
Yeah, and he's six appearances behind Brian Lebone. He's got more goals.
He's a true Everton legend. You know, there's no doubt he's won our last two trophies. He's a true Everton legend. He comes across the gents. I've been to an afternoon with him. He's a really nice fella, and you know, although he started out across the park, and I think he was a boy at Red, he's someone who really embraced Everton and really, really holds the club in high regard. And I think it's a kind of a shame he's not been involved with the club since he retired. I know he went on to get the Champions job, but you feel like he's someone the club should be using a bit more as an ambassador. You know, when you see other players, he seems to have an awful lot to offer, in my opinion, anyway.
Well, like you said, he's a proper upper tier legend. He's won the league and the cup, two charity shields. Yeah, he's got more goals than Brian Lebone. He's got 37.
He's a really good player. Like we saw in the autumn was creating up until this season, he'd been fantastically consistent. Even when he was player manager, you know, he always performed. He was super fit. Still had a fair bit of pace for his age as well.
He was also man of the match in the cup final win against United that precedes our good times era.
He was. So we can blame him. You can blame Dave for this podcast. I was joking, Dave. It's a weird one. This, I don't know if you remember at the time, because obviously Barnby ends up getting the England squad, but there was a lot of chat around him getting a recall. But Kevin Keane comes out after the game. He was in the stand. He was quite fulsome in his praise of Kevin Campbell. He said, a lot of people talking to him here, something along these lines. I just remember from the time, I've not looked this up. He says along the lines of, I'm here to, a lot of people think I'm here to watch Nick Barnby, but the player who impressed me the most today was Kevin Campbell with his link-up play and stuff. Although I think displacing Owen and Shearer was probably a bit of an ask, wasn't it? As much as we love Kev.
Next up, it's a rubbish performance at the Dell where we just never win.
Simmons is his debut, isn't it? Comes on for the injured Gerrard.
He does. Gerrard's off injured, yeah. It's Thomas Meyer who'll start the next few games, though Simo clearly doesn't make much of an impression.
Walter did. Well, we'll go delve into it, but Simonson has 3 years between his signing and them starting a league game, and I think the reasons for that become abundantly clear in due course, don't they?
Andy Dayso manages not to send any of our players off that day as referee.
Andy, don't you really got an in for Andy, haven't you?
I think he had an in for us.
That's a fair point.
Just constantly sending the boys off, like. But yeah, we lose 2-0 anyway. And then it's Davy Moyes has pressed the North End in the fifth round of the FA Cup. Umzi's on the mark again. He scores a free kick.
Brilliant goal.
Yeah. And then Joe Max Moore gets the second. It's an identical goal to the one he scored against Spurs.
I feel like every goal he scored was at most 8 yards out, pretty much. One, maybe the odd exception, but particularly that run when he was scoring goals at first. He always just scrambled there for 20.
And then we go into February away at Selhurst Park versus Wimbledon. The yellow kit again, the lucky yellow kit. It's a 3-0 win. Danny Cadamatri plays right wing and he looks really useful.
He has a really good game, Cadamatri. And I know Campbell gets two, but I'm not sure if Campbell got man of the match, but it was a close run between him and Cadamatri. Because I would argue this is one of his better games for Everton, even in an unusual position. He plays really well.
Yeah, and it's a bit like being the nicest man in prison, isn't it? With that comparison, but he does play well. It feels like he's an option that we've maybe neglected a bit this season.
Yeah, he sets pace out on the wings, isn't it? Because when you've got players like Pembridge, and I know Barnby has a brilliant season, but when you've got players like that, there wasn't a lot of pace in the side, was there?
No, he gives Alan Kimball a hard time. He sets up two goals for Campbell. Goals are weirdly similar to the point where I thought, I thought I was watching the first goal again, like by mistake.
Yeah,
Campbell then sets up Joe Max Moore for the tap-in to seal the 3-0. Cadamatri starts again the next week for the visit to Derby County, but he's not booked and substituted in this one. Joe Max Moore.
It's a good finish, that, from Joe Max Moore. It's probably one of the few exceptions in terms of it being a fair. Even that, he's in the box, but it's a good drilled low finish, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So Joe Max Moore scores. We're not missing Franny Jeffers all that much at the minute. He's out injured, but Joe's come in and he scores 5 games in a run.
He's looking to steal a transfer, isn't he, at this point?
Yeah, apparently Richard Gough was key in bringing him here. So an interview job, he says that, yeah.
Yeah. He's grateful to be there as well. He sees the opportunity, doesn't he? Like he's really up for it.
Spencer Pryor then concedes a pen right on half-time. He really looks like one of the lads from Lockstock, the one who says that he should make up the £10,000 debt they owe by putting £100 on a horse at 100-1. There's no one's worth today. But the equally reliable Michael Ball is back and he scores the penalty.
One of the things I found weird about this season, Ball obviously scores that pen, but he's in and out of the team, which I found really strange because of how consistent and reliable he'd been in the previous two seasons.
Yeah, I don't know whether Walter just liked playing 4 centre-halves across the back in this system.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose I think there was a school of thought that sometimes he wasn't as great facing his own goal, was he? Was better with the play coming on to him. But I always really liked Michael as a player. I thought he wasn't just a boy of blue. He was a really talented player.
Yeah.
And I just think we didn't make the most of him in this season.
No, I agree. Well, that's enough for a 2-1 win, and it lifts us up to 7th, and a push for the UEFA Cup. Looks like it might be back on. 20th of February, on a Sunday, we play Aston Villa at home, FA Cup quarter-final, and this year, the two semi-finals are going to be at Wembley. Because it's the last ever season at the old Wembley. And I remember thinking we were definitely going to get there and, looking forward to getting there again. Even though I went in 95, being 8 compared to being 13, feels like a million years apart. Steve Stone, future Everton coach, opens the scoring.
Shortly after, there's the archetypal Joe Max scrambled finish, but Benito Carbone haunts us again right on the stroke of half-time. He'll later get sent off, but they hang on. And live on Sky Sports, we suffer another really crushing FA Cup defeat.
The week after, when we go to Upton Park to play West Ham, Barmy gets a hat-trick of really badly defended goals, although the Blues...
That's just awful for most of these goals. He's unacceptable, some of the goalkeeping that goes on.
Yeah. The Blues are playing good stuff despite West Ham's bad defending. Yeah. Dozy asks Rio Ferdinand, lets Barmby rob him to play in Joe Max Moore for a fourth. There's loud boos around Upton Park at this point. Harry Redknapp also doesn't make any subs, and, you know, as if to say, you know, you're the 11 that have come
he's
out.
Hanging them out to dry, isn't he?
He's telling them to take the medicine. He's not going to bring on anyone who's not responsible for this performance.
Did you go to this game, Kev?
I did.
Yeah. I didn't, and I didn't even, I obviously watched it on Match of the Day, but it was half term, so we've been taking me and my cousins and my sister, and my mum and auntie went to watch Toy Story 2, and as we went in, it was 0-0, obviously in the day before mobile phones, and we come out, it's like, yeah, we won 4-0. It's like, what?
Yeah.
But I've got a hat-trick, I'm buzzing.
Yeah, that just never happened at the time, and it's never...
No, it really didn't, did it?
It's never happened much since either, so it was...
No, definitely not.
There's some questionable goalkeeping from Myra as we draw 1-1 at home to Sheffield Wednesday. It's a bad result because they're second bottom, but we still move up to sixth.
The lovely kit they wear as well, I'd like to say that. Mainly yellow, but with the white and black panels on the front. It's a nice kit, that Sheffield Wednesday kit, 98 to 2000, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, certainly a bit of you.
Nice. I mean, it wasn't as funny when Carbone netted twice the season before, but I like the kit.
There's also there's rumours of a giant owl knocking about in the bushes in Stanley Park.
Love of a ball.
Exactly. Walter Smith then brings in Hughes as Mark and Stephen. We're back where the transfer window ran until the end of March. We go to Stamford Bridge without Campbell and Jeffers. They're both injured. Ball and Unsworth are ill. Don Hutchison, and I've forgotten all about this, has been transfer listed by Walter Smith because he's rejected, apparently, Everton's final offer of a new contract.
It was a bit sad, that, wasn't it? They let it come to that. And because from what I can gather, I don't think Hutchison really wanted to leave. He just wanted parity, which when he was playing as well as he was, scoring, assisting goals and as captain most weeks, I don't think it's unreasonable.
No, and I think this is where the stories of Richard Gough having Walters here kind of came in.
Yeah, so he's remembered the slap.
Yeah, Hutchison hasn't played for a month.
Yeah.
Dennis Wise, not to be confused with Cuthie from The Wire, who goes by the same name. It's the other one. He scores first, and then Cadamatri gets onto a mark, and it's a long throw. It's equalised in the second half, and it's a goal, and a point. It's a good point away at a third-place Chelsea side.
Yeah, a good Chelsea side. They go deep into the Champions League this season, only losing to Barcelona an extra time. In fact, they beat Barca at the Bridge, don't they?
I got a plane home from this game, you know. Like, unplanned.
Oh, that's not very climate-friendly, Kev. Come on.
This shows that it's, you know, in a pre-9/11 world that we were like, set to get the train. I think we were having a drink somewhere in London after the match and saw some family friends who've got a flight down to Luton. And they were like, go on the plane back with us, like a couple of the lads haven't come. So
we just took the tickets.
We just flew back. And you could just do that. Yeah. You could literally just turn up at the airport and fly back. It took like 25 minutes. Yeah, unusual. Mark Hughes starts and plays a full 90 minutes in a poor 1-0 defeat to Coventry at Highfield Road. There's a penalty from Gary McAllister with his penultimate goal versus the Toffees.
Mr. McAllister?
Yeah, I remember at this point that there were a couple of lads who went to school with, they were big Reds, and Everton were linked with McAllister after this. And I remember this because they buzzed off me at the notion of Everton signing McAllister. But sure as shit, they changed their tune shortly after, which obviously we will delve into sadly at some point.
Well, we then lose to both North East teams, 2-0 at home to Newcastle. The season review says that it's 1-0, says the key.
Yeah, I don't understand why. I noticed that was poor. I mean, it's the first home defeat of the season. Duncan comes back. It's a rainy Sunday. I didn't take it too well, if I'm being honest with you. I Newcastle club I'm not really fond of, but it was... I don't think you can have any complaints with the result. It's a good goal, the second one from Kieran Dyer, but we just didn't turn up that day, did we?
Oh, and like you said, it's the first home defeat of the season, which, considering that we're on the 19th of March by this point, is a good goal.
It really is, yeah.
Barnby then scores again away at Sunderland, but we lose 2-1. Hutchison's
Kevin Phillips scored a great goal. I know Barnby's goal's good, but Kevin Phillips is winning is a good enough goal to win any game, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Hutchison's back and he's off the bench versus the team who will eventually sign him in the summer. At the minute, it's 5 without a win, but you always fancy us to beat Watford at home. They're next on the 1st of April. It's funny hearing their fans booing Mark Pembridge because he used to play for Luton.
Yeah. Well, Do you remember they used to have like Everton TV in the stands? Do you remember the April Fool's joke that they tried to play this day?
Was it, what, the red kit or something like that?
No. So Campbell was obviously out for the season, injured, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And when they announced the team on Everton TV, they put Campbell in the team as a joke, but it was like 2 p.m. And people were like, what, he's back? And they're like, oh, no, it was just a joke. We're like, what? So we've got Mark Hughes, who at this point his hair is grayer than mine. I know he scores in this game, but people were fuming. Like, well, A, it's after 12, and B, don't be joking about that, because after Kev's injury, we look a bit light up top, don't we, even with the addition of Mark Hughes.
The reveal of the practical joke has to make you feel better rather than worse.
I'm fuming. Everyone's like fuming.
That is like 101 of a Russell. So yeah, I mean, booing Pembridge because he used to play for Luton, that connection, there's no way that connection will have registered with me at the time, so I think it just tickled me, you know.
Yeah, I don't think I would have been as aware of their rivalry until probably recently, and the stuff from Rob Edwards. And shout out to this one, we often talk about nowadays about how teams churn out 3 kits a season, but for the next 2 games, Paul Gerrard turns out in a goalkeeper kit from 1997, which is pretty cool.
Mark Hughes rolls back the years with his display. He gets his only Everton goal early on. Joe Max Moore gets 2, and it's 8 goals in 13 games for him since he signed. There's some comical defending from the Hornets that lets Stephen Hughes smash in his first Everton goal, and we win this one 4-2.
But I think it's a great finish by Stephen Hughes, and I'd just like to say at this point, I think Stephen Hughes is playing so well, he probably was unlucky to miss out at Euro 2000. For the listeners, and I'm saying this, he's trying to keep a lid on it. Kev's least favourite ever, signings ever, is probably Stephen Hughes. He is not a fan of Stephen Hughes. I think it's fair to say, isn't it, Kev?
Well, a week later, we're away at Leicester City. It's the classic shitty ground. It's Philbert Street. Robbie Savage plays centre-back, so it's no surprise when Don Hutchison steals into head hole on 27 minutes. It cancels out Jerry Taggart. Yeah, that's right, because Jerry Taggart has scored earlier on to earn a point.
Paul Gerrard, that goal, wasn't it?
Yeah. So Hutchison cancels out Jerry Taggart's earlier goal to earn a point and a 1-1 draw. Neville Southall's on the bench when Bradford come to L4 on the 15th. Unfortunately, he doesn't get on. John Collins captains Everton that day. Hutchison is well and truly stripped of that privilege at this point, despite being back in the team. Collins plays left back and he even ends the game at right back when Abel Xavier goes off injured. I remember him like.
I think Collins plays really well in this game. It's probably one of his best games for Everton. I think he was as a signing, he really flattered to deceive. But when he left, I think there was an element of frustration because this game, but right on this time, is when he finally finds some form, doesn't he?
Yeah, he came into spring and played some good stuff. Yeah. Phil Jevons starts this one. He gets an assist for Pembridge in the second minute and then he also wins a penalty for our second goal.
And it's his only start for the club. Like, well, there's always league start. He does really well, Jevons. I was a bit surprised we didn't see more of him after that, to be honest with you.
Well, hold the phone. It's not his only league start.
No, of course, he started the Coventry in the following season, didn't he? Away in the league. Is his only league start at Goodison?
Wait there again. It's
oh,
not,
am I wrong?
It's not
wrong.
It's not his only league start this season. We'll come to it. So,
okay.
Unsworth scores the penalty as he usually does. Pembo and Unsworth both do this like weird bus driver type celebration. I don't know what's going on there.
I try not to think about it. The two players are not particularly careful.
Barnby scores before Captain Collins bombs on from right back to get a nice fourth and we win 4-0.
Lovely goal, Al, isn't it, as well? Proper.
Really good.
I like lack of technique, there's the savings, but just that put your laces through it, no thought, just blam it. And as soon as it leaves his foot, you know it's going in the top corner, don't you?
Oh, I think there is technique. I think it's pinpoint. And like you say, I agree with you there that it's one of them where you know that he's going to score even before he's hit the ball.
And remember being a big picture on the front of the Evertonian, he had his arms aloft in front of the Gather Street, and like, going back to the thing about Kev Campbell, he looked quite content to be there. He thought, well, after 18 months of struggle, really, he's starting to find his feet as an Everton player, isn't he?
This must have been before Big John Tigana got on the phone with Mohamed Al-Fayed money.
Do you want to come and live in West London?
So Liverpool are somehow in second when they arrive for an infamous derby on Good Friday. Probably the worst.
Is it? It's not a title race because United are like well clear, aren't they?
Yeah, like some of the reporting that I saw after this game said, like, oh, you know, Liverpool's title hopes being denser than United are about 18 points clear.
United win at Southampton still in the April. They win it like five games to go or something, don't they?
Well, there's a good shift from the players here with Campbell, Jefferson, Moore are all out injured. So Mark Hughes is up front with Hutchison. Hughes works hard. He also misses a sitter, though, in the second half.
He does. And Walter makes a bit of a shift tactically during this game. He puts Pembridge on the right, doesn't he, and Barnby off the left. And it doesn't work too badly, actually.
Yeah, well, Barnby's the only right-footed midfielder of the four, and he's the one that's playing on the left.
Yeah, that's why it's done out to me.
Kevin Keegan's here to watch him. He'd actually said before the game that he was specifically here to see how Barnby played.
Yeah.
It's a tight game. Pembridge goes close. But the big talking point is the moment when Graham Hall cements himself in Everton folklore forever. So Michael Ball takes a long throw. Hall gives a soft free kick against Don Hutchison for a foul on Gerrard. And then Sander Westerveld takes the free kick just outside the box. It's in the last few seconds of injury time. It hits Don Hutchison right on the arse and kind of like spins away right into the Gladys Street net. So straight away, you see some of the players celebrating and the fans behind the goal. But Paul's blowing his whistle and he's crowded by most of our team. Andy Gray.
Collins looks outraged, doesn't he? Collins at this point, you see they look outraged. Him and Stephen Hughes are livid, aren't they?
Yeah. And yeah, because Hutchison's quite nonchalant about it. You know, he probably knows that he was kind of taking his time walking away from the
field. Yeah, he wasn't the full 10 yards away, was he?
But like Andy Gray says, you know, Hutchison's done nothing wrong there and he calls it as it is and says that Graham Paul has bottled it and he's right and it'll take Paul 10 years himself to admit that.
He doesn't say any credit, but you know, that shows how bad the decision is. Even he admits it, you know, in the end, that it was just a disgraceful decision.
So I noted that it's the worst thing to ever happen on Good Friday.
Yeah, definitely.
And also that it's the most controversial poll that we've seen on our podcast since episode one, the poll about how much you rated Sam Allardyce's performance as manager from 0 to 10.
I'd like to apologise to the listeners for that joke on your behalf.
It wasn't a joke, it's an observation.
Okay, all right, Jerry Seinfeld.
Who? So Mark Overmars gets the only goal the Saturday after when we play Arsenal at home.
How fast was he, mate? He just absolutely strips the defence, doesn't he?
Yeah, him and Anelka were just like two of the quickest players you'll ever see.
Unbelievable. I remember my dad, you said this about Radzinski, I think you might have said about Overmars. You'd send him the chippy, he could come back with everything piping off. Absolutely rapid.
Dennis Bergkamp has subbed on 69 minutes, presumably just had a terrible game. Arsenal go above Liverpool. Also going above Liverpool are Leeds United. They host us at Elland Road for a really entertaining 1-1 draw on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, it was a really good game of football, this, because I mean, our European hopes are kind of dissipating at this point, because although we've not lost a lot of games, we've not won many, obviously towards the end of the season, but we give a good account of ourselves against a very good Leeds team. You know, Michael Bridges, as we said earlier, had been brilliant from the season. Another really well-taken goal from him. You could say maybe Paul Gerrard should do a bit better, but he hits it so well, doesn't he, in early. And I think at this point, it's a summer before they sign Viduka. They've got Smith, but for whatever reason, he's not playing. They kind of have Bridges and Kuehl as the two, and they look pretty lively as a pair, don't they, Kev?
Yeah, and I wrote here that Michael Bridges on this highlights package looks a bit like a young Kelly Osborne. Don't know if that's struck you as well.
Yeah, he looked like he was going through changes, definitely.
But with all his injuries, he was going to the Aussie quite a lot.
Yeah, okay, we'll accept that. That's 1-1. We'll accept that.
It's all right. I'm definitely going to edit in a little Liam laugh. I'm going to have a little...
I'm going to have a
stock Liam laugh that I'm just going to isolate when I'm doing the editing and put it in there. Yeah, we end up with nine men in this game. Dunn and Hutchison both see red. Michael Dubry also works for David O'Leary's young team. And I've put young team with a capital Y and a capital T there. A bit like Phil Brown's Hull City. Just that was how they were described.
Yeah, and O'Leary would always call them my lads. Yeah. He'd always refer to them as my lads in the interviews. And to be honest with you, people say he's an assembled a good team, but he's very fortunate as well, isn't he? Some of the players come through the system like Kewell Hart. And a player who played really well in the game at Goodison, who probably doesn't get the plaudits he deserves because he had a great career. Well, he had a good career, but he didn't reach the height of other players. Stephen McPhail, who was a really good player, really good technician in midfield. You know, Smith coming through. Woodgate, who was a fantastic player. You know, they had some really good players at that point, Leeds.
So in the second half, there's some really nice play from Collins and Hutchison. They've developed a proper understanding this season.
Yeah, they have.
Hutchison looks for Barbie. Who's made one of his kind of trademark runs off the left. Passes a little bit too long for him, but Nigel Martin in the Leeds goal makes a complete mess of it. He misjudges the bounce, possibly fouls Bambi, but Bambi does well, keeps composed and kills in our final goal of the season to front some great limbs in the away end in the corner.
Were you in that away end, Kev, were you?
Yeah, I was at that one. Yeah. I remember really enjoying this game.
It was a great game of football. I think the last time I saw Nigel Martin get left like that was when he was at Park Foods. but it didn't mean Paddy, but seriously, it was a real uncharacteristic error from Martin, both his time at Leeds and at Goodison and Palace. You know, and we profit from that. And it's weird, isn't it? Because we're not winning many games, but we're playing some nice stuff. But as I said before, I felt like the momentum from 98-99 went into this season a bit. I think the lack of wins and there's a lot of change maybe bleeds into the next season. Just a thought.
Yeah, we come to the end of the season with four games without the win.
Yeah.
So yeah, perhaps the warning signs are there.
Well, I think it's because it's the Watford win's the last win, isn't it?
Bradford, I think.
Oh, Bradford. So yeah, so you've only got Watford and Bradford in like nearly 10 games, haven't you? Like it's not relegation form, but we're not firing all cylinders. So
no, we get a couple of good points against Liverpool and Leeds, but yeah, I mean the Borough game on the last day of the season it's a really bad performance. We're wearing the new Puma kits. I'm unsure about it, to say the least, at this time.
I'm unsure about it, but this is in the days before social media, and for some reason, sometimes my dad would say we live in Dovecot and we'd get the 10, but rather than getting off the old Swan, we'd get off in Kensington and get the 27 towards Anfield because it would be quieter. And as we're getting the 27, I just know Everton are going to wear a new Puma kit. I've got no idea what it looks like. I make my dad get off the bus at Anfield because we notice just right by the cop, there's a giant billboard, which ends up being the echo, of Kevin Campbell in the brand new Everton Puma kit. But in the days before social media, so I saw the kit before the game because of that. It's there's too much white on it. I mean, the home kit for this season is not one of my favourites, but it's not. I think... Not only is it not a great kit, because obviously we'll talk about other pods, because you'd associate it with a really poor Everton team. I think that kind of taints it even more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
It doesn't help it. And it is a listless performance, weirdly. You'll be shocked to hear me praise this individual, but in this game, Barnby plays really well, even though we're poor. I remember a lot of the chat after the game being like, oh, Barnby needs to get a new deal. They need to tie Barnby down to a new deal because he's quite important to how we play. And I know... We've been poor, but Janino had also scored a brilliant goal in this game. Got a few claps, didn't he? Because with it being the end of the season and being like nothing really to play for.
Why did you have to get off the bus to look at the kit? Why couldn't you just look at it from the bus?
I could only see a little bit, and the bus was going right past it. So I said, do you mind if we get off and have a look at it?
Oh, I can imagine you being a massive pain in the ass with stuff like that.
That is really rich coming from you, and I still am a massive pain in the ass about those sorts of things. So my dad didn't mind. It's not a far walk, is it?
I can just imagine your dad being like, can't you just wait an hour to see it properly? No.
No, no, do you know what?
No, I want to get off Anfield and walk.
No, do you know something? My dad didn't mind one bit. He's the opposite to me. He's very like me in many ways, but when it comes to football, he's off to me. He doesn't like my attention. He doesn't share my love for minutiae, even though he's one of the most knowledgeable, insightful football minds I've ever met. But he also really appreciated that's the sort of thing that I like, so he didn't mind indulging me.
He also doesn't share your ability for picking good podcast names, does he? Do you remember what you suggest that this podcast should be called.
I'm not going to comment on that because he's a great man. He's a great man, and you didn't agree with the title. I got where he was coming from. It's not one I was particularly fond of, but he's probably going to be listening to this. So I love you, Dad, and don't listen to Kev. He's a tit.
Nice one, Jed. We're going to close out episode 3 of gabbing about Goodison here, talking about this Middlesbrough game. Yeah, given we've got this kid for the next 2 seasons, it's weird seeing certain players wearing it.
This Barnby, awful Collins, Hutchison.
Yeah, that's it. The Barnby one especially, I think I said to you earlier this week, it looks like something from an alternate reality.
I think that's one of the really interesting things when teams wear next season's kit at the end of the season, like Joy, because it's so unusual, it's so jarring, isn't it? And especially because Barnby probably is the best one because you associate one of the big moments in this kit was against him at Anfield. So It is particularly peculiar, isn't it?
Well, there's also peculiar positioning from Paul Gerrard for Brian Deane's goal. And then in the second half, Stephen Hughes shows the work rate that he'll become renowned for at Goodison. Janino, as you mentioned, he lays off to Brian Deane for a 1-2. And then Hughes just decides that he can't be asked following his little run. So before you know it, it's 2-0. The commentator on this says that it's one of the goals of the season. Which,
it was a good goal, like, but I don't know about that. There was quite a few good goals this season, wasn't there?
Well, I mean, if this is the only game that he's watched this season, then fair enough. But otherwise, no.
No, it's a good goal. But like you say, I think we're on the beach at this point, and it's frustrating, isn't it? Because although we end up finishing 13th, I think we're only some, like 6 points off 6th, because the league's there's quite a blockage. Well, it's quite a concertina in the middle. That's the way I'm looking for of teams, isn't it?
Yeah, we dropped from 10th to 13th, which is our lowest place since August, and that's disappointing. The table doesn't lie, but it feels a little bit unfair.
It does, because we're not really in any danger at any point in the season. Because isn't that the previous season, we've been embroiled in a relegation fight, and we finished 14th, didn't we? It's quite bizarre that we've only gone up one place, but the seasons are miles apart in terms of progress, aren't they?
Yeah, and to compare it to our first episode, 17-18, we finished 8th that season with one less point than we get this season. So
yeah, and this definitely feels like a better season, probably because of the context of where we've come from. But it's definitely a season I view more favourably than 17-18.
Well, it's better football. I mean, if you look at the stats, definitely. Look at the stats, Liam, right? We've scored one more goal than Leeds, and we scored 8 more than Liverpool, and they both finish in the top 4.
Really? Wow, I didn't realise that.
Yeah. We only lose 3 home games. Which shows that, like, you know, too many draws have ultimately cost us this season.
Yeah, because we only won 7, didn't we?
That's right. One more point about the Middlesbrough game is that Paul Ince is wearing number 9. It just shows what an arsehole.
I used to hate that. He had that for like the 4 seasons. But I used to hate that about him wearing 9. It used to wind me up.
He's just effortlessly annoying, wasn't he, Ince?
Yeah, I think as well, there was probably a bit of rancor because when he was at Inter, I think there were some murmurs that he might come to Goodison Park. He obviously ended up going across the road, didn't he? So I think that didn't help. But he was, yeah, he's quite a bombastic character, let's put it that way.
And that's the season over, and Barnby does get his rumoured England call-up for the upcoming Euros in Belgium and Holland. He plays twice as England go out at the group stage. It's a big summer of TV with that championship followed by the debut of Big Brother.
Yes.
There's a few players that leave. We don't see them play another game for Everton. There's Tony Grant, Gareth Farrelly, Terry Phelan, Dave Watson, Mitch Ward, Don Hutchison and John Collins. And I think we can leave it there, really, can't we? There's nothing else that happens in the close season that's worth remarking on.
No, I don't want to discuss any other transfers.
So this from Crossing the Park, as we reach out to the Good Times bookshelf for the first time. This is a book by Peter Kenny Jones. It came out last year. And this subheading for this is The Men Who Dared to Play for Both Liverpool and Everton. Do you want to guess? I'm going to leave the foreword for another day. So the format of this book is that it looks at every single player that's played for both teams. They've asked a sample of Everton and Liverpool fans about what, you know, their thoughts on these players. So things like, you know, do you remember the player? There's a lot from the early 20th century that, you know, people might not know about. But then they've also asked these fans to give a score out of 10, one for their status as a club legend and one for their status as a traitor. So What would you say Barnby scored out of 10 for the Everton fans here?
So, 10 being the biggest traitor?
10 being the highest, yeah. But it's the highest.
11.
8.5.
That's surprising, yeah.
Makes you think, like, some people have, you know, time heals all wounds, and maybe the passage of time has kind of softened. I reckon that happened with me, and then watching this season back, because I was thinking, I'm not bothered about Nick Barnby anymore. Like, but watching it back, I was like, you know what, he was really good for us that season. And then reading his quotes from this book, I was like, right, yeah, little shit.
Yeah, I think it goes back to an age thing, doesn't it, as well, Kev? I think, you know, for me, one of the reasons and the Barnby thing probably rankled so much, and a lot of Everton's at the time, I feel this way, is he was our record signing, but I think for the 2.5 seasons before this, he'd been relatively underwhelming. He had spells where he did okay, but you would never bank on him as a regular player, would you? And this is the first season where he finally finds his form. And as much as Everton have been in turmoil at that point, Everton have also stood by him as a club record signing, and, you know, successive managers have given them games. You know, I remember at one point, Howard Kendall gave him the armband in a away game at Southampton, didn't he, in 98? You know, so the club made a real effort to play him in a number of roles in different systems, and it feels like he finally finds a place where he can play good football. He finds a position that works for him, and, you know, as soon as he gets the first opportunity, he kind of sells you out. So I think that's really where it goes. I think that's why a lot of people were angry at the time.
Well, Jones mentions in this book, as a child, Barnby's favourite player choice may help to explain some future decisions. Speaking in an interview with Joe Walmsley, the midfielder said, quote, "There's only one King Kenny. He was my idol and a lot of people's idol. The first time I saw him play on TV, I was instantly drawn to the way he played. He was a clever footballer, just a genius of a footballer." There's a quote here about his decision to join Everton back in 1996. Merseyside, when it comes to football, wow, it's a religion. It's a brilliant place to play your football, whether it's for Everton or for Liverpool. And I think we will be revisiting this book in future seasons, but for now, this has been 1999-2000, episode 3 of the Good Times Everton podcast. We'll see you next time for some more good times.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
I wrote to you that Michael Bridges on this highlights package looks a bit like a young Kelly Osborne.
Yeah, he looked like he was going through changes, definitely.
But with all his injuries, he was going to the Aussie quite a lot.